Welcome to another episode of Gaming the System, the podcast where three intersectional feminists examine gaming through a feminist lens. And today you join me, Alex. I've got Jem.
Hi.
Hello, Jem. And we've got the lovely Finn as a guest on today as well.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking, continuing our chat about Baldur's Gate. This episode we'll probably have a bit more spoilery content, just to warn you. If you would like to listen to non-spoilery or as much as we can non-spoilery content, go back and listen to the first part and then come back and listen to this part, and tell your friends about it too. But for now, I think we're going to largely be talking about one of the best things in Baldur's Gate 3, and that's your party companions. So without further ado, I think Finn is... They are itching at the bit to talk about it. So we'll let you go first.
Okay, first question I have for everybody here, because this is decisive. Divisive, even, not decisive. Gail, what do we think?
I don't know.
There it is.
That's a pretty yeah. My character I mean, is romancing him.
Initially, I was like, ooh, I like you. And then now I'm like, I don't know if I like you anymore, but I'm roped in, you see, this is the trouble. I'm not romancing them, but okay. I like them as a character. But I also feel like they're on the edge between being okay and being annoying. I don't know, it's difficult.
The word that's come up in most of the discourse that I've seen has been mansplaining.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That is true.
But I want to point something out. He knows more than you because he's a wizard.
Very true.
His entire
and
life.
And a god, isn't he?
Not yet. But, yeah, I get it. It's annoying to have somebody explain it to you, but I'm a dumb bard. My IQ is maybe 60 on a good day. So if Gail wants to explain to me how Mistra and magic works, I'm here for it. But I also feel like that might make me a terrible feminist, because I'm just like, yeah, I'm right off. Also, he has the dorkiest pickup lines. Mm. And as a certified dork, I'm fine with it. At one point he was making allusions to horny books we could read together, and I'm like, yes, okay, Gail, I'm here for it. And everybody else is like, this man has no game whatsoever. So I needed to get the Gail reactions from you both. That was very important to me.
Anyone who thinks he's got no game is you know, has clearly not spent very much time with him, because I had a very impressive night alongside Gail, I have to say. And I think he's got a lot going on. I agree with the mansplaining thing, but I also agree with the point you made about that. And I think, that's a really valid point. And I mean, at the moment, my character and him are definitely in a relationship. I think he thinks we're married or something now.
Another question that this one's just for me. I think me and maybe one other person who maybe listens to this. How do you get him to do anything? Because he keeps telling me he likes me, but the only person who will do anything is Astarion. And also, we were looking at statistics in part one. We were looking at the statistics for the opening weekend of this game. And what I don't understand is 100,000 players have been rejected by Astarion. What did you do
to have him reject you? Well, Gail, I don't know. It took a long time, because he's all like, I'm not just going to leap into bed with the first hot druid that I meet, and you're going to have to, we're going to have to take things slow, and it's all about the love and the romance. So he he does take things slowly. But we had a lovely like romantic kiss, and that was really sweet. And he did like he showed me how to do some magic. So that was nice.
I did get that.
That is really. And I have to say, bad feminist or no, I was a bit like, oh, I want somebody to show me how to do floaty magic. But yeah, and then I can't remember why we ended up in a clinch, I don't want to give it away because it was such an impressive scene. I was a bit kind of like, my main problem is that I don't tend to game a lot when my daughter's around, but occasionally I do, and it always seems to be when these very inappropriate cutscenes are going off. So I was kind of a bit like conscious that at any moment she might walk past the screen, and I was watching basically porn.
I do feel bad because I have it on my speakers, and the way my room is in my house, if my housemates walk past my room, they can hear whatever's going on. So there are occasions where somebody just out of my speakers says something buck wild or completely inappropriate, and I just have to laugh. And I'm not laughing because it's necessarily funny, but I'm laughing because anybody within a 10-foot radius of me is going to be like, what the hell are you doing? Which is, you know, who are you romancing, Alex?
Me, Shadowheart, interestingly enough, which I think may be a long game, after the Grove, which is, I think, one of the major first times you can do anything with anybody. Me and Shadowheart, we just had a nice time by the river, drank some wine and kissed. And actually, I don't even think we kissed at that point. We might have waited to kiss a little later. But we're in there for the long game, I think. But the trouble is, you see, there's an interesting dynamic when you're multiplayer, because it depends who you are kind of paired with as your main player. You can swap the party members around so that other players have control of them. And if you don't have control of those players, you can't talk to them. You'll go and talk to them, and Gail, like, for example, because Gail's usually with Tom, who is my partner, who's playing as Reg. His character's name is Reg Bonegrim, which he thought was a very good orc name, and mine is Lena Bethlehem, I think I decided just randomly to make that name. And anyway, so what happens is he's got Gail on his side. So whenever I go and try and talk to Gail, Gail will be like, I'm sure you're interesting, but I don't have time right now to talk to you. And they'll just like, there just won't be any dialogue. They'll just leave it. And I'll be like, I'm so hurt. And then you have to like, you can only talk to people who you're controlling. So hence why, and also other party members who are not actually in your party, but at camp, you can all talk to, say, like Helsin. And this is where the betrayal comes in, you see, because I've been talking a lot to Helsin, and every time I talk to him, he's just like full on flirt. He is like constantly, you know, just trying to pick me up. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't cope with all this. It's too much. I'm going to have to relent at some point, even though I'm safe for Shadowheart. So I eventually relented. I was just like, yes, we'll have to do something after we get out of the Underdark. And then Helsin's like, yes, we will. So now I've kind of like got this double relationship going on. I'm like, but what will Shadowheart say when she finds out? But I'm curious to know about Helsin, though, because Helsin is interesting to me. So we'll have to see how that goes. But as for the other characters, they're kind of on an amicable level. And some of them, I just don't have many sort of points with, as it were, because I just don't have the opportunity to talk to them unless we swap them around and take control of them ourselves. So it's definitely interesting on multiplayer. And it was funny though, because at that night with the big party after the Grove, because Tom hadn't had anyone like to play to take control of very much, everyone he tried to try and romance, everyone was just like, I don't think we're at that stage yet, to his character. Aww. And he was just left on his own. Like, nobody loves Reg. Reg is just on his own. And I'm just like getting all these offers, like, maybe, but maybe not. It's just terrible. But yeah.
I'm, I will say, surprising though it is, given that I'm wearing extra glasses, have a septum piercing and this goth stuff behind me, as a poly person, I was very, very happy to learn that you could be poly in this game. Cool. I was like, yes, this is, well, they know their audience. I was about to say, yes, this is representation, but no. Yes, they know their audience. They know who's playing this game. I was disappointed to realise you can't do it with everybody.
Ooh, interesting. We'll have to see how that plays out.
But, yeah, but I also like, you know, salty though I am about that, I do like that it sort of...
It's a bit more realistic, I suppose, because some people are going to feel differently about certain types of relationships and other people are going to...
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that was... It was nice to have that in there, and it gives... The variety gives the companions more depth. And then, Alex, you said you hadn't really played RPGs before.
Not so much.
Did you ever try Mass Effect?
No, but I've been told repeatedly that I need to. So I think it's in my PS Plus collection, because it was on PS Plus for one of the free downloads, you know, when they do their monthly thing, which is in my library. But I have not yet taken the plunge because I know it's going to take up many hours of my time, I suspect.
Oh, yeah.
But I did do some romancing briefly in The Witcher, which was an interesting experience for those cutscenes that we mentioned wanting to see. But, yeah, there was that one time, I forget who it was with, but it wasn't Yennefer, if you're interested. I think we were still searching for Yennefer at that point, but I didn't get very far in The Witcher. It's just such a big game that I became witched out, as it were, when I got to a scary part, and I was like, because I don't do well with horror, there were all these like zombie creatures in the lake, in the water, and I was just like, oh, I just want to have a nice time on my boat and sail around, and I don't want to get attacked by zombies. So at that point, I was like, I'm probably not going to carry on for a little while. And then, of course, other games happened.
Did you, Jem?
Play Mass Effect? Yes, I did. I have a really interesting relationship with having relationships in games. I always feel a bit like it's inappropriate. I was kind of like, but we're like trying to save the world. You know, we haven't got time for any of this mushy stuff. These are people I work with.
That's true. That is true.
I just always feel like, oh.
I have a friend who's actually a veteran, and he refused to do any romance in Mass Effect. He was like, there is a chain of command. I am at the top of it. I am not going to do this.
Yeah,
which is dedication to the bit. But the reason I bring it up, who did you romance anyone, Jen?
Yeah, I think I did, but I don't remember who. I know Daniel, my husband, I know he romanced everyone in all of the Mass Effects, as many people as he could romance.
Brilliant. I bring that up because, especially Shadowheart.
Mm.
Shadowheart is a trope, but I think a well-executed trope, which is, oh, I'm a woman with emotional issues and a dark past I don't really want to talk about. But we've all met that person.
Mm.
And the last time I saw people going as nuts about romance was in Mass Effect. And Tali was the main sort of straight guy.
Mm.
But I haven't met very many shy, technically brilliant women who are scared that their environmental suit is going to rip. Because that we don't have that in real life. And I just feel like the context in which these characters exist, like the system, D&D, yes, there's magic and owlbears and all that good stuff, but like the fundamentals of their characters are relatable to our lives. A lot more than romances in previous RPGs, and I think that is fueling the fact that we're all so into it.
Mm.
So that's my shower thought of the day. Sitting in my head. Yeah. It needed to be said.
That's a really good point, actually, and that's why people are getting so engaged with it and so connected. And because it's, I mean, we know that like our brains struggle to tell the difference between, you know, reality and unreality. So, you know, like that's why dreams leave us with those emotions throughout the day, and why relationships and connections that we make either within game worlds with actual people or it with characters in those game worlds or books that we read or TV shows. I mean, I was properly in love with Spike from Buffy. Like I actual in love with him. I knew he was a character. I knew it wasn't going. It wasn't, you know, I understood it, but I was in love with him, and it was a genuine pain for me when I was like, I'm never gonna be able to be with this person. He's not real. So I think there is a real thing there. So I think the more realistic, the more hyper real those characters are, the more that connection is hard for us to just push to one side, and the more engaged we get with them. And I think, you know, it's not just on a romantic perspective, it's companionship. I mean, I genuinely feel bad when I have to leave Karlach at the camp and she's like, really, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I spent hours trying to work out which group I'm going to take with me because there's a playoff between like which makes the most tactical sense from the gameplay perspective and which makes the most emotional sense from you know my characters. And I think, you know, they are written really, really well, actually. Yes. And you think you know where a character's going, and suddenly something happens, and suddenly that's not where they are, that's not who they are. And I think that's the other thing that's been really good, that they've had layers and layers and layers.
Yeah. Definitely. I think we nearly missed getting a lot of companions when we first played through, like the first sort of half an hour after you crash. I think we were just like, la, 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 wandering around, like completely oblivious. And then I realised once we got near the grove that we'd missed two or three companions, and we were like, we should probably go back and look for them, maybe, because we'd just been completely through-lining all the way to like the main objective and stuff, and not really looking. Well, we were looking around. We felt like we were looking around. I think that shows the richness of the world that they built and the everything that happens within it. Feels like this is the natural path, but actually, you don't realise how much you're actually missing by not looking around in other places. So there's all sorts of things I think that you could easily miss, which is one of the most interesting things about it, and probably why it's going to merit multiple playthroughs as well. But yeah, we nearly missed Gale, we nearly missed Lazelle. And also I think Withers as well. I was very, very pleased not to miss Withers. Although apparently he does make his way to
Withers
camp,
out. But,
out of the,
have you taken him out?
Oh, like, out on. On a thing. I think he's just in camp, isn't he? Or is he? Or have you not? Do you not have him in your camp?
I thought you could take him.
Oh, you could? Oh, I don't know. That would be cool if you could. What could you do?
I think you can.
Oh. Wow.
Well, I haven't taken him out.
Yeah.
He hasn't wanted to come out with me, but he is in the camp.
Yeah.
But my husband killed Lazelle. Look. When he met her, he's killed her.
Wow.
So she's not with him.
Oh.
Because he was playing a paladin character. I don't think it is it's called paladin, as it's like a priest. But anyway, a paladin character. And he, all the options that he had that could have taken her meant that he would be, is it, that's what?
Oh, anyway, he'd break his oath.
Yeah. So he decided not to go with those, and he was following the rules, and that meant that he ended up in a fight with her.
Oh my God.
And she died, so yeah, so he didn't have her at all. And I was really like, it was really annoying. I was like, it's so cool that you're playing this game in a completely different way to me, and it's so annoying that you're not playing it the same way that I did. I was like, I was really annoyed that he was doing things. I was like, well, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. But it's really cool to hear that he did that. I have to share with you that Laezelle was my first lay in the game, and that happened like within like 2 nights. I think we were like, I was just like, I'm going for it. I was like, I'm gonna like get over this like can't romance companions malarkey, and I went for it. And she was so terrifying. I just was like, God, so scared of her. I don't even take her out with me anymore. I've like properly gone right off her.
Jeez.
I missed Will. Ooh. Apparently I would have had a conversation with him early on, but he wanted Karlach dead, and that's my big golden retriever girlfriend. You can't have her. That's not happening. So
interesting.
Did you both manage to pick both of them up?
Yeah, I mean, I just said yes to everybody. There's like a billion people in my camp. No, exaggerating. But yeah, they're just all there. Everyone, even Volo, who I've heard is apparently a mainstay of D&D. I get all the info from Tom. He's like, oh, he's this character or whatever, because I don't know who anyone is. And he'll be like, oh, it's what's it from blah. And I'll be like, oh. Okay. Yes.
I did that horrible fan thing when I figured out it was Volo. Uh-huh. I think I didn't figure it out until he was captured. And then I saw him talking to them and I went, I did the Leonardo DiCaprio meme. I did that. I gotcha. That's Volo. I've read your guide. Like, it was... I did the same thing with the Dungeons & Dragons movie, though. And I felt dirty by the end of it, because every time they mentioned something that I liked, I was so excited. It's like, I am a fan. This is not good.
Oh, my gosh. I got so excited in that movie when they had the characters from the cartoon, as you know, when they're going into the maze. And there's two other teams of adventurers. Yeah. And one of them were the characters from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
I didn't know that.
I was just like, oh my God, in the cinema. My daughter, who was obsessed with that cartoon, which is partly why I remembered it. Maybe I wouldn't have, because I did watch it the first time around, but then I watched it a lot when my daughter was younger. And she doesn't remember it at all. And she was like, shut up. It's the acrobat, and it's go back and have another look at that bit, because it was just really nice.
So I have one other question, and I think this is just a social media thing, because the only social media that I use is TikTok, and I know that a lot of other people don't touch that. Astarion, neither of you have pledged your undying love in this conversation. You might have been the game, I don't know. So I just, because at least my corner of TikTok and the wider platform that I can see just is here for Astarion. Just as everyone else can jump off a cliff, Astarion all the way.
I can definitely see why that would be, definitely. Things haven't taken that direction in my current playthrough. They may do in future playthroughs, most certainly. And I'd love to, I think, if I had to play one of the origin characters, I would pick Astarion to play. I think if I had to play it again.
Yes, I would,
But yeah, nothing has sparked, shall we say. No, I can definitely see why, though. I'd definitely be keen to do a playthrough where that happens a lot, but that is not currently how this journey is going in my first one. But I might save it for a single playthrough, depending. But yeah,
That is fair. That is a different dynamic to sort of add to it.
Yeah.
I like the way you say, like, I'd like to do a playthrough where that happens a lot.
Yeah.
No, it's just
if it's a...
I like Astarion. I do really like him. I like his, I love his story. I love his look. I love his aesthetic. I love the whole thing that he's got going on. I'm a massive vampire fan. I read like all of the Anne Rice novels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm like, you know, all of that. The only thing I find is that his voice is a little bit too whiny for me. He's a little bit too whiny, and I want him to be a little bit more I just want him to just be a little bit less whiny, and then I would have been 100% with him. I think if he had like Gale's, mind you, Gale's voice is a little bit too,
I was about like, to say, although I don't, you'll have to tell me this, because when you get deep into like Astarion trusts you and you're having really emotional conversations, the voice acting is superb. Like there was one conversation where he's almost breaking down in tears.
It was
the voice acting was so good that it actually took me out of the scene, because I was too busy going, that was delivered impeccably. So like, does that happen with other, so Gale in this instance, like when you get to know him better, I think so.
And I think it has happened with Astarion, actually. I mean, because I'm now on into Act 3, so the characters have really started to develop, and their own storylines have progressed quite a lot. So, you know, I'm seeing different sides to them now, and I'm seeing more depth to them. And I think that it's interesting, actually, because Gale, I'm a little bit concerned about Gale, and Astarion is, I mean, he has a lot going on. I agree with you. I think the voice acting for all of them is just amazing. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And it really, they are, I mean, I'm back to the point we were making earlier about, you know, how they're so sort of, we can connect with them because they feel like real people. And that definitely improves over time, I think. And so, yeah, I think I haven't found it sort of taken me out, but it's definitely sucked me in. Definitely. And I'm not knocking Astarion's acting, and I think he's probably perfectly spot on for his character, because his character is this sort of petulant, slightly spoiled little child, like brat, who has been through a really traumatic experience and, you know, is very damaged. And I think all of that comes a lot across in the voice acting for him. But I mean, all of them, I mean, I have Will as well. And we nearly had a sort of romantic interlude, but then there was this, like, I couldn't get involved with Will, because then Gale was like, you have to choose, and I was like, well, I don't want to do that. So I sort of I did reload that one, because I didn't want to kick either of them out, really, and it was really sad. But but all of them, even because Will, I found, was like very two-dimensional initially, and again his voice acting has just grown. All of them have grown on me. Yeah, all of them have grown on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I did not like Loiselle at the beginning, so
he just still scares me so much. Wow. I think it's really funny. I just ignore her, like she's in the camp, and I go just back to the camp, and she says, "Yeah," and I'm just like, "No, not talking to you." I feel bad about it, but
no, that's just mean. No, I just don't understand. There are some, being a bard and having high persuasion and deception is good, actually, because otherwise, again. I am playing a pansexual himbo who is flouncing around with a lute talking to all of the animals. I noticed now that we're level 7, that they did not include talk to plants, because that is another one that character always has at the tabletop, and that sounds like a nightmare. So I understand why they took it out, but this character is even more... If Karlach is a golden retriever, my character is like... Oh my god, I can't even remember. What are those little yappy dogs that need to be like? Pomeranian.
Oh.
My character is a Pomeranian. Just likes to sit there and be pretty and be pampered and not be useful in any way, shape or form. And somehow I've convinced Lazelle to still like me.
That's pretty impressive.
That must have been quite a job. Yeah.
That's, yeah, good rolls, because otherwise,
Wow.
So who would you, if you could, like, have three of them round for dinner, you know, in the real world, who would you invite round?
That's tricky. Just because I like him, because he's great. Withers, number two. and Karlach, I think, because I really like Karlach. But I haven't got to know her as much because Tom tends to take control of Karlach, so she's just like, I can't talk right now. Okay, bye. So I don't know. My character hasn't got to know her very well yet. But I learned
this
through Reg.
So
but yeah, we can both, because it's split screen, so we can see when other people talk and go and listen. But the relationships between my actual character and the companions depends on like whether I can control them or not, which is interesting. That makes definitely.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jim?
Are you just taking extra thinking time?
Oh, no, I knew the second you asked the question, but I'm interested in your answer.
I think that I would like definitely Karlach, because I think she'd be fun. I would I'd have to have Astarion, because he's just there for all the wit and the sharp retort. So I think he'd be an interesting dinner party companion. And who do I have for my I feel like I need to have another woman, really, but not I might have to have Isabel. I don't know if you've come across Isabel. I know she's not one of the I'd have Isabel, so you can just because I think she's got an interesting story to tell. I'm sure she'd have a few interesting things to share. So when you meet her,
she's in a bit of trouble in mine at the moment, but that's all I'll say.
What about you, Ken?
Karlach, Astarion, and Gale.
Mm.
Just no question whatsoever. That's also who I try and keep with me at all times. I think my only complaint with this whole system is that there are entire periods where I will have somebody with me who I don't care about, but I know this is really important to their plot, and I do want to see the story.
Yeah.
So, like, Lazelle, But when you're doing Githyanki stuff, she comes with me. So, yeah. Apart from Halsin, I haven't done anything with Halsin. I feel really bad.
No, I haven't.
In my camp, chilling.
No. No love for Halsin.
makes dinner for us all when we go back.
Yeah.
I mean, so that was something I did want to ask about. Well, like, which characters do you spend most of your time traveling with? And the other thing I wanted to talk about was when you take a character who you feel is going to be interested in the area. I've been a little bit disappointed by how little they commented on it, how little they've engaged. And I know that in previous Baldur's Gates, there's been a lot of chatter between the characters when you're just walking around the game. Like they talk to each other, and they've done a lot less of that in this game. Certainly, as I've gone through the chapters. So yeah, I wondered what you two thought about that. I know we're running over a little bit, but I think we'll just carry on if that's okay.
So because Tom and I take up two spaces in the party, we can only have two companions, which makes it even harder. But because I'm a rogue and he's a barbarian, that kind of takes out Karlak and Asterion. So unfortunately, even though we like them the most, we kind of fill up their space because of the classes that we are. And then so we have Shadowheart, because I like Shadowheart, and obviously I'm trying to get with Shadowheart as well, and we've got a good thing going until she finds out about how sin that is. But and then the other
person, maybe not,
I could keep it a secret, it could be our secret. And then the other person is Gale at the moment, because I think we just like playing with a wizard. So yeah, even though he was a bit rubbish at the beginning, like you say, Jim, we're getting there slowly. But yeah, it's about that balance in the party as well, which is a difficult thing, isn't it? But yeah.
Yeah. No, oh shoot, you've just reminded me I should go fetch her. Because I'm bringing Shadowheart along for things in Act 2, just so that she gets to look at things in Act 2. And then I'll hit, like, the end, I've killed a boss or whatever, and we've got that bit where we just need to disarm the traps and deal with all the lockpicking, and she goes away and Asterion comes back. So I've just realised that I'm in a bit that's really crucial to her story, so I need to go fetch her again. Because what I'm going to do after we stop talking about this is I'm going to hang up, I'm going to get a snack, and then I'm going to play Baldur's Gate 2 for the rest of the day. Three, not two. I'm awake. Either way.
Yeah. Now, tomorrow's my Baldur's Gate day.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No, that is one of the things that I think we've all found, Alex, that doing this podcast just makes us want to play everything, you know, like whatever we're talking about, we're kind of like, oh, I want to go do that now. So, you know, it's like, it's
you've had a run of good games. Have you never had an episode where you're all like, no, this sucks?
It depends what we're talking about. Matt and I once did it's not a game, but we did an episode on the Avatar sequel, which we both did not enjoy. But, yeah, that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite, because I feel like I don't have a lot of gaming time, I'm quite discerning about the games that I choose to play. So I don't tend to get very disappointed because I tend to do huge amounts of research before I choose anything.
For instance,
but we have talked a bit about some guilty pleasures and of that. So I feel like we only scratched the surface with Baldur's Gate 3 in this last two sessions. So I feel like we're going to have to get you back again, Finn, and talk some more when you've
I can keep going. Don't worry about me. I can keep going.
Because I think we need to talk about some of the diversity and some of the accessibility aspects of the game. And I mean, there's so much to talk about, isn't there?
And how queer it is.
Indeed.
We haven't gotten there, but how relentlessly queer this game is. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, we will organise that, and perhaps after Christmas, once all the chaos has died down. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to chat with you both.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Do you want to do the outro, Alex?
Yeah, I can. So yes, thank you for watching and listening. If you liked it, please do so physically, like it, and give it a ranking on Spotify or that sort of thing, or on Apple Podcasts. Share it with your friends, spread the word. And if you like, you can also head to our Patreon, which I think Jem mentioned at the beginning of the episode. We do have new content every Thursday, more or less. So look out for that, and we'll be back for our next episode soon. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Gaming the System. If you want to support us, you can donate to us through our PayPal by sending it to wearegamingthesystem@gmail.com. If you want to send us a one-off donation, if you want to donate to us monthly, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/gamingthesystem. Until next time, bye-bye.